Today's Last Podcast on the Left is brought to you by The Anthrax Protocol by James Thompson. In James Thompson's new pandemic thriller, The Anthrax Protocol, a team of archaeologists uncover a lost tomb and unknowingly release a deadly strain of anthrax. And the infection is spreading. With no cure, no vaccine, and no way to contain it, is there hope left for humanity? Find out by picking up a copy of The Anthrax Protocol by James Thompson today. Learn more at kensingtonbooks.com.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
I think it's fine. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get raped at his family ranch.
I don't know.
I don't know. I've never really been to Texas. I've only been to Austin, which I've been told is sort of the Hillary Clinton of Texas.
That's right.
The big, fraudulent, wide-bodied, serious haircut part of Texas. Or is that the rest of Texas? And is Austin the Bill Clinton of Texas?
Austin's the Bernie. The rest of Texas is the Hillary. All right, welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. I'm Ben Kissel, looking at the beautiful Marcus Parks.
Hey, hey.
With us, as always, we got this guy.
I'm Henry Zebrowski, okay. And I always will be.
Now, are
until,
you sure?
Until the day I die, and then my son, who will be named Henry Thomas Zebrowski III, who will have to live in my shadow and have to figure out his own fucking bullshit to get out underneath the pressure of what it's like to be the next Zebrowski.
But you're not a junior.
I am a junior.
You are a junior?
Henry Thomas Zebrowski Jr. is my full name.
You're fat, cop, dad.
Henry Thomas Zebrowski
Jr. had the audacity to... He is a senior.
I am in his legacy.
There is nothing more egotistical than making your kid a junior when you're a failure.
He is not a failure. He's a civil servant. And what do we know about civil servants? They are the feet to the body that is America.
All right. So today's subject matter, I'm so excited. It's a paranormal photography.
And technology.
And technology.
Okay, now, all right, Jebediah, I want you to smile for the camera. We have it all set up. Please smile for the digital camera.
Get out!
No. I understand you want us to get out. This is your final resting place, but just please, just for a second, I'm just trying to get a picture.
Get out! Piggy goes, piggy went, piggy has much blood to spent.
What?
Something's weird about this Sears portrait studio.
I'm really sick of these crude ghost rhymes.
Yeah. What a wood background.
Well, photographs of paranormal activity have been around almost as long as the medium of photography itself. And while even before the days of Photoshop, a ghost photo was fairly easy to fake using double exposure, today we'll be discussing a few mysterious photos without such easy explanations, and at least one photographer whose method of photography itself was where the mystery began.
Now, let's say this. I really want to believe in ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this has been our problem on Last Podcast on the Left, is we've wanted to cover more ghost stories, but it's very difficult to find the stuff that is genuinely creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff you read about ghosts is honestly completely complete bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to learn a lot about bullshitters and the bullshit that the bullshit really soon.
Right.
But how do you feel? Do you feel like there are ghosts to take pictures of?
I think that there are. Absolutely. And you know what, ladies? Your ex-husband isn't coming back. So just feel good knowing that someone's still in the house with you.
Or do we think that they are just reflections of the consciousness of pure energies on the floor of a holographic background of a wormhole?
I like ghost better.
That's what Daniel Rowntree believes.
And we'll definitely get to Daniel Rowntree. But before we get to Daniel Rowntree, let's start with the highest order of bullshit that it is contained within the phenomenon of paranormal photography, orbs.
You watch what you be saying about orbs. I got a whole collection of orbs, and they're my family.
Is that right?
They are my brothers and my sisters, because they all died, and the last ones died in a fire. And now all I have are these precious pictures of orbs, all available to you for only $29.95.
You're selling your family pictures?
Yes. There's my mom right there. It's right next to this picture of a tomato.
Yeah,
you can see that right there. It's a big pink orb, because just that was the shape of her, the bottom of her belly.
Isn't that nice?
Now, spirit orbs are small spherical blobs of light that sometimes show up in photographs, particularly flash photography done in dark spaces. And while some claim that these orbs are visual representations of spirits, the phenomenon is among the most easily debunked claims made by the paranormal community. The rise of the spirit orb phenomenon coincided almost perfectly with the proliferation of digital cameras. And while orbs occasionally showed up on pictures taken with traditional film, sightings have exploded since digital cameras became the norm.
I think I would actually love the idea of being an orb. You know, you could. I was never good at playing baseball, but maybe I could be the baseball.
Yeah.
You know, people could throw me around the walls and stuff like that.
And you'd finally be light and fun instead of long and dark.
That's correct. I want to be an orb.
Yeah, you'd be like the little Cinderella fairies, but it'd be like you'd show up and be like, you got any beer? Yeah, you got any loose jerky laying around? Or you'd just go into like a singles bar and go like, Hey, what's going on, lady? I can grant you a wish. The only way I can do that is if I get a smellier vulva. And then you could go up girls' skirts and live inside their vaginas like you've always wanted to.
Oh, my God.
Now, believers say the reason why the phenomenon coincides so neatly with the technology is because digital cameras are able to pick up paranormal activity in ways that traditional film can't.
Oh, God, what is that? Oh, I'm up to my knees in horseshit.
Oh, is that something?
Now, skeptics say the exact same thing, but use the fact that digital cameras pick up objects that normal film can't to debunk the claims.
I feel like that's got to be a big blow. When they use the same reason that you just said, you're talking to a scientist and you're like, but the technology has gotten so incredible that it catches all these orbs. And he's just like, exactly, exactly. God damn it, Herman. It's like, I've seen a ghost, all right. It's like, you remember that movie, Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
You remember that movie? It's a little known movie. And there was when that fat man, the Blues Brother, he laid down on the bed, and then the ghost whipped down and like kind of pulled down the zip of his pants, and I guess it alluded to the fact that he gave him a little bit of a blowjob. And I tell you what, it's completely real, except when it was done to me, it was the ghost's ass.
Did you masturbated to Ghostbusters? Or
yes, of course. It's a pornography film.
No, it's sort of a comedy spoof horror.
No, it's film a about... You tell me you got a grown man covered head to toe in green goop and no one's masturbating to that? Then I call you not an American.
Okay, well, I guess I'm a Mexican.
Now, spirit orbs are actually nothing more than pollen, dust, or moisture. Things which actually weren't picked up on traditional film. And as far as why spirit orbs are more prevalent in supposedly haunted locations is simply because most of these places are abandoned and dirty. So when you're walking around yelling at ghosts, of course all of the dust is going to get kicked up.
Yeah, your new black ghost hunting Skechers are kicking up dust bunnies everywhere.
I feel like you guys are being too cynical about the reality that ghosts are orbs. I mean, that's just a fact.
It's not a fact. The reason why they show up in graveyards is because graveyards are in fields with grass. And when you're walking around, a bunch of pollen gets fucking knocked up.
Oh, well, yeah, you've never been to a Wisconsin graveyard.
And that's got to make the ghost stalker's data man mourner, like, furious with his allergies. Being like, well, I could tell that there's a ghost here because I'm getting dry-throated and my eyes are red. And I got to tell, ghost activity is quite heavy in here because, me a ghost handkerchief. Oh.
You're allergic to paranormal activity.
Yes. Ghosts are filled with hay.
Is that right? Not pollen, though.
No. Pollen only gets you allergic to it if you're Chinese. I don't know. Get out of here. I gotta look at my EMF machine. It's going to zippity-zappity-zappity.
Troy Taylor, the president of the American Ghost Society and paranormal photography expert, I'm on his side. He put it perfectly.
I find the whole idea of orbs to be more than a little insulting. It insinuates that when I die, I will show up as this pathetic blob on someone's camera to be displayed to the whole internet like an 8-pound catfish mounted on the wall.
It's a great reward. I mean, who doesn't want to be mounted on somebody's wall?
You think two catfish sit around and be like, man, I hope they don't eat me. I hope they stuff me.
I think that's true, yes.
Now, that same researcher said that orbophiles, as he calls orb enthusiasts, have again and again contacted him, saying that he has, quote-unquote,
orb envy because his pictures don't have enough orbs in them.
I love that.
Whatever.
But I do think that's a bit of a orbophile is kind of an insulting term, isn't it?
Well, he means it to be insulting.
He's okay. Being pedantic.
Yeah, these are underage ghosts being lured into some sort of bizarre ghost van so they can be had sex with by a man with a mustache.
But I understand wanting to go ghost hunting. It's a fucking blast. It's a fun to go walk. It's fun to go walk around an old abandoned church or an old graveyard. It'd be nice if some of these paranormal groups had a couple of, like, hot women in it or even hot dudes in it so they could all make out in the graveyards. Because to me, that's the whole point, is that you take the person you find hot out to the fucking the old church or the old graveyard, mm-hmm. and you get to be like, man, I hope this is not the night the ragged phantom comes. It's like, I've heard the only way to keep him from killing us in our sleep is that you gotta touch my penis.
So that's actually sort of a sexual entrapment.
No. Everybody agrees. Everybody knows. You're using, yes, a little bit of fear to make everybody wet.
She wanted to go hunt a ghost, but then you went out because you wanted to hunt her.
I wanted to hunt some pussy ghosts with my ghost-busting stick. Is that the term? Is that
that's
what you're...
fine.
Oh, I gotta rattle some ghosts around inside of your parts. This is I'm great. I was great single.
No, when you start doing heavy research on orbs, it becomes painfully obvious that the people who are most vocal about their belief in orbs are also the same people who have something to sell or promote. And as Troy Taylor says, and it's an opinion that we all agree with, I have not changed my mind about the fact that random ghost hunting is not an investigation. And while all of these so-called ghost hunters that have a stranglehold on the paranormal television genre these days, while they all deserve our scorn and derision, the one that we'll be covering today might be the worst one of all, Mr. David Rowntree.
Rowntree is a favorite on Coast to Coast AM just because George can ask him questions of being like, tell me, David, do ghosts have a smell? And then David Rowntree is like, yes, George, they absolutely do. And you know what that smell is? I'd say caramel. A caramel smell, that's amazing. You know, some people say caramel, and some people say caramel. What do you say, David? I'm a caramel. I say caramel. That's what I say when I say caramel. Me, I say caramel, because why forget the second A? Am I right, David? So tell me, do you think you could marry a ghost?
That's a perfect George Norrie impression.
David Rowntree, his credentials is that he's a New Jersey ghost hunter and cast member on the Destination America show Ghost Stalkers, which, like many of them, specializes in using technology to prove the existence of the paranormal.
Wouldn't it be amazing if Ghost Stalkers was just a show featuring the ghosts of famous stalkers like Mark David Chapman and the guy that shot himself in the head while like trying to talk to Bjork?
That would be amazing.
And them just being like, now that I'm a ghost, I can go in their bedroom anytime I want. But David Rowntree, he wrote a book called Paranormal Technologies, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, and he wrote a book called Demon Street USA, The True Story of a Very Haunted House. But David Rowntree is a part of the paranormal technology movement that's happening in ghost hunting and in ghost theorists right now, which is the idea of bringing heavy, quote-unquote, heavy science into the world of ghost hunting. So what he says about shadow people is that he believes... one of his many cockamamie ridiculous sentences that he says is that they are parts of antimatter. They are not, it's not black matter, it's not dark matter, it says antimatter, which is purposefully non-existent and reflects light rather than us. It absorbs light rather than reflects light like we do.
Antimatter is from the 1987 DC Comics crossover Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Exactly. Science.
Yeah, it seems like
And that
it.
Is exactly how it is described. He's getting his research from old DC Comics crossover.
But he's also a shaman who practices wolf medicine and regularly refers to himself as Grey Wolf.
Well, now I'm confused. Is he a scientist?
No, he's a scientist, but he's also a shaman.
But I think he's Puerto Rican.
So what does that make him?
I don't know, but I will say his Facebook profile, I got lost in his Facebook profile, which has got one of the saddest things. The David Rowntree Facebook profile says his category is former public figure, which is actually very sad.
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
But I went through and I really got lost in his world, and he's got a lot of pictures of him shirtless with his weird dad bod, yeah, with a fur vest on and many Native American necklaces
he's
on.
He's one of those guys.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I mean, you had me at New Jersey. I knew exactly what he looked like. Do you have to be mean to the ghost when you try to entice them to come out? That's my one.
Come out and face me, ghost!
It's my pet peeve about all these shows. They just scream at these ghosts.
Yeah.
And why can't you just be nice to it?
I don't know. You'd think, you know, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar, I always say. But
I say you catch more flies with a fly-catching bucket.
It's just a bucket.
Paranormal technology is what I'm talking about. You need a ghost-catching bucket.
Yes, I suppose that's true. Well, I say be nice to a ghost for once.
Yeah,
see,
please,
if that works.
Please. Well, we've got a little bit of information straight from David Roundtree's mouth and from an interview that he did on Coast to Coast about 5 years ago. And on this interview, he really hammered home his central belief as far as what ghosts are.
It's actually an interesting idea because he tries to do the gigantic mega theory for all paranormal activity, or as we like to call it, anomalous activity or experiences, where he says that everything we see, like UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, are just, and this is what I said before, which is ridiculous, is the reflection of the consciousness of pure energy on the holographic boundary of a wormhole. Mm-hmm. He thinks that localized wormholes pop up in houses, and when we see ghosts, is that we see energies sort of on the you know, when you come onto like a piece of paper, like you're doing a magic ritual.
Absolutely.
And it's got a film on the top of it. I guess I could say like iced tea or water,
yeah,
but it's got the bubble on top of it. You say ghosts play out on that because when people die, these wormholes open up, which is what the tunnel that we see in the near death experiences.
That's from The Frighteners.
You made the analogy more confusing than what you were actually saying.
No, I'm just saying what he's saying is that it's wormholes that pop up locally. Localized.
Like no, yeah, I know. I've seen The Frighteners.
It's a great movie.
It either goes to heaven or it goes to hell.
But he said holographic boundary of a wormhole.
Michael J. Fox didn't even have the disease in The Frighteners. That was a heck of a movie.
But he's saying we're seeing into other realms through tubes.
Yeah.
Space tubes.
Well, yeah, what David Roundtree says, that he hates telling people about this because they will, in his own words, poo-poo him.
You would be surprised, George, the kinds of poo-pooing that goes on. It's heavy and it is frequent, and sometimes I find myself up to my shaman necklaces in poo-poo from various critics, and I gotta say, I'm about to take people's shovels away. You know what I'm saying, George?
Yes, I do. You wouldn't believe how much poo I see on a regular basis, up to 10 cubic liters. Now tell me, David, do ghosts wear shoes?
Here's a few other examples of things that David Roundtree actually said on this interview of Coast to Coast.
No, in his various experiments, he tries to bring high technology to every one of his investigations. So what we try to do is prove that EVPs, that what we hear ghost talking, is not actual sound. So he took microphones and put them in Faraday cages, which the only way I could think to describe them is Frankenstein jails.
They're like, what's a Faraday cage?
It's like, it's like a Tesla. You're standing next to a Tesla coil. They have no purpose as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Faraday cages, what they are is that they are cages that exclude electromagnetic and electrostatic waves. Faraday cages are actually very useful in science.
You don't know. When have you used them in science?
I've never done science.
Exactly.
But I read.
Henry. I poo-poo what
don't
you say.
Don't poo-poo.
What's that sound there?
Okay,
that's
guys.
That's me scraping poo-poo off the poo-poo deck.
Oh, my God. Henry, please don't poo-poo Marcus's ideas.
I'm fucking chock full of it.
Well, no.
All right, I had a lot of knowledge flax this morning from the readings I've done, and so my poo-poo is loose.
Okay.
And he did not prove that EVPs were not sound. Well, he says that he recorded something, but the thing is that he shows it. He, in order to prove an EVP is real, what he does is he shows it to five people, and if each one of them says that they hear the same exact thing, then he says it's real. But he says he's only encountered about 10 of those in the entire time he's been doing doing investigating, which is about 20 years.
It's an anti-noise noise?
You're an anti-noise noise.
What? No, why? Now you're poo-pooing me?
You're
Marcus, Henry is going poo-poo
Henry,
crazy.
Henry, stop pooping. You're poo-pooing too much.
I'm about to put some rubber gloves on because the poo-poo is about to get up underneath my fingernails. I'll be grabbing it so firmly and mushing it into your perfect hair, Ben Kissel.
Thank you so much.
Now, Henry, I want to ask you this. Why does he want to change the word paranormal, spelled P-A-R-A normal, to parenormal, P-A-R-E normal?
Paranormal sounds like it's more than normal, right? Parenormal is remaking it normal. That is what he said. That is what he said. Is that he's going to use science to show, which is what people talk about with studying paranormal activity a lot, which is that it's not magic, it's undiscovered science. The way he did it makes him sound like an asshole.
Interesting.
He said the best way, so this is one of my favorite ones, is that in order to tell the size of cold spots in rooms, they take the temperature, they take the thermometers, and they throw them across the room.
They
don't break, they can get an accurate reading. But he's like, but you'd be surprised, George, how many microphones we go through in an investigation.
That's how Agent Dale Cooper tried to solve the mystery of his dreams in Twin Peaks.
Exactly. So, true sources.
Yes. Well, he likes good things. He likes good comics and good TV shows, good movies as well.
And he does have fantastic taste.
He does. Sure. Frighteners is a great deep cut to learn about how to catch a ghost.
Yes, and Gary Busey's son, Jake Busey, very good.
He was very good. Very good. Everyone was very good.
Also, Michael J. Fox, before he became a human drink mixer.
I already mentioned that he wasn't.
It's very sad.
And Jeff Combs just being himself.
It's all he needs to be. Now, speaking of equipment, he says the main problem with ghost data is that for some reason, they cannot permanently record the dial reading. So he's like, a lot of times you literally have to trust that the guy running the sound cart just heard a ghost say, "Hey, I think one of you farted here." Where he's just like, the things bounce, and they have no proof.
Right.
And then he says, now all of his various, so how you know that he's a true scientist is that he used a bunch of shit. Like he says, anecdotal event, casualty, correlation. He says stuff like differentials all the time.
Byproducts of the effects on the environment.
I don't know what he said. And then he also is saying that the reason why he knows that ghosts come from wormholes is because he said ion increases happen quite often during ghost scientists, which I still don't really understand. But the problem is that ion meters, in order to measure ion, which I don't even know what any of this means, where the ion's jumping up and down. Mm-hmm.
He's counting on you not knowing what it means.
Exactly. But he disapproved himself. He's like, but the problem with ion meters is that they're notoriously inaccurate. The best ion meter you can have is only 5% accurate.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
It's not accurate.
And then
it's not good.
But then he also says that there's spikes in gamma radiation that occur because of subatomic annihilation.
If what is being annihilated and what is doing the annihilation?
Shut up!
We're in an interesting spot right now because we're hearing information that's so stupid I can't understand it, which is making me feel dumb. But I should feel smart for not understanding this because it's so stupid?
It's the problem is that you're trying to put science in paranormal activity research, and I actually really believe in it, right?
Yeah.
I really want the hard data to show us that ghosts are real. I want a fucking alien's cock in a jar. I want to be looking at it. I want to ding, 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 ding. I want to jiggle around in a jar. I want to see it. I completely agree with him. But the problem is you have charlatans like him who come in and throw a bunch of nonsense science words at everybody, which gets him booked on a television show where they think he's a scientist, and it's all horseshit.
Yeah. I mean, if I was producing a TV show, I'd book him.
Yes.
It does. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guest, but he's a terrible person. For in addition to all of his bullshittery, he's also one of those guys who lies about his military service. He claims that while he did serve in Vietnam, he did actually do that, but he claimed that he got the Silver Star, 2 Bronze Stars, and a Purple Heart, and he also said that he was there at the fall of Saigon, and just a dozen different inconsistencies is found in his story, but Roundtree has could very easily release documentation to prove his claims, but he has refused, saying on Facebook, quote,
"My life never has been and never will be an open book." deal with it. Winky face emoji.
Oh, he winky faced
it. Yeah, he did a meme. He did the deal with it meme.
Yeah, he did.
Deal
yeah.
with it.
Deal
yeah.
with it. Yeah, the sunglasses come down, deal with
it's
it.
It's also what? Really sad when you go through his whole Facebook photo profiles, you see him go through three girlfriends.
Oh.
You know, and you see the same picture of each yeah. one of the girlfriends, and they're heavily photoshopped. And also
there's
a picture
in the back.
And also the picture of the PlayStation controllers over a woman's breasts and his hands with that shirt that has two PlayStation controllers over the hands.
Oh, my
and it's
God.
His hands on his shirt. He says, like, got a chance to play with these controllers, loved every minute of them.
What did Vietnam do to these people?
My uncle's a piece of shit. I'll tell you that.
God.
Yeah, and when he was pressed further on releasing this documentation, he doxed his accusers and wrote that he has, quote, a rather long hit list, and shortly after posting a selfie in which he was pointing a rather large gun at the camera, he wrote the caption, to my enemies.
Fuck
so
yeah.
He's like Steve Buscemi from Billy Madison. He's yes. just ready to go.
Yes, and he had his daughter take the picture of him holding the gun up against the lens of yeah. the fucking camera. That would have been a fun story.
I will say, if you do think you've wronged this man, give him a call.
Give him a call.
Just give him a call. Just tell him, hey, thinking about you.
But I actually think there's some credence. So when he says that all of his readings point to this wormhole theory, and I think there is something to the idea
it's
of many
possible.
Dimensions,
yes.
The way our brains sort of receive the many dimensions. I think that it's, I get that.
Yeah.
But the problem is that a man like this is sort of like what we deal with in the UFO world with disinformation, which is like this horseshit muddies any of the real theories that could reflect something like this.
Well, this is more misinformation than disinformation.
Yeah, he's
this
not
is
actively
just a,
doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Disinformation is like someone, unless this man is a plant.
Like possibly the MJ-12 documents, which we will get to very soon, you fuckers.
Yeah.
Aliens, yes!
Uh-oh.
I've been reading so much alien shit. I don't
okay,
trust anything that you say.
Oh,
now I'm on a new, I'll say this real quick, I'm on a new thread, which is, if the hoaxers are hoaxing us, right? If UFOs, if the picking up of UFO ships and having alien bodies, if that is also a hoax administered by the U.S. government, why are they doing that? Right? If they're not even trying to hide alien bodies, what are they trying to fucking hide?
So the hoaxers are hoaxing us?
Oh, yeah. It's an onion. It's a pretty big onion.
And I've been shouting about it quite a bit.
That's good. That's
no,
very good.
Things are going well career-wise.
Yes, good,
you can
good.
Tell by the more I scream about aliens.
Today's other sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is Casper Mattresses Obsessively. Engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/LEFT and using the code LEFT. Of course, Casper brings together two comfy technologies for better nights and brighter days. Latex foam and memory foam. So they just got the right sink. Just the right bounce. No matter how you sleep, they've got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you. You can try it for 100 days, and if you're not happy, they'll pick it back up. It's $500 for a twin-sized mattress and $950 for a king-size. Compare that to industry averages, and that's an outstanding price point. So get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/LEFT and using the code LEFT. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, while David Rountree is without a doubt a fraud and a generally terrible human being, there are actually some ghost photos that exist that merit some actually serious discussion.
And
quite
some,
a few, in fact.
And there's some creepy-ass shit.
Yeah.
And that's what we wanted to do today, because we want to make sure that you're afraid that the brown woman is going to come out of your ass.
No, not the brown woman, the brown lady.
I'm
please.
So sorry.
She is a noble woman.
Brown woman is Oprah Winfrey.
No, you can't say that.
You can't say that?
No, I don't think you can say that.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, so it's Shonda Rhimes?
What are you talking about?
Well, yes, the first photograph we will be discussing today is the infamous brown lady
Tyra
photograph.
Banks.
Not oh, Tyra okay. Banks,
no,
the
no.
brown lady of Ryman Hall.
Ooh.
On September 19th, 1936, a photographer from Country Life magazine was visiting the aforementioned Raynham Hall in Norfolk, England. At around 4 p.m., as he was setting up his camera to take a picture of a particularly beautiful staircase.
It's a nice fucking staircase.
I have to say, I thought it would be a woman, I have to admit, for Country Life magazine.
No, for Country Life magazine, okay. He's taking pictures of the house. He witnessed with his own eyes
a ghostly apparition moving towards him. And while the reporter traveling with the photographer claimed to have seen nothing, the photographer in question snapped a picture anyway, and when the film was developed, a fairly convincing transparent figure was indeed seen moving down the stairs. Hmm. Now, the legend of the brown lady, so-called because of the old-fashioned brown dress that she wears, has its beginnings in the early 1700s.
Because the original pink dyes had to come from Native American babies.
Yeah, sad, though, what we did to them.
Now, as legend has it, Charles Townsend, a nobleman with a famously violent temper, upon learning that his wife had participated in a short affair years before the two were even married, Charles Townsend faked the poor woman's death and locked her in a room at Raynham Hall till the day of her death.
I mean, don't you usually kick your girlfriend or wife out after you find out about an
affair? No, not in 1726.
You keep them closer.
I thought it was the get out of here, but he's like, come in here.
No. It's like you make them their own little world where they're the only girlfriend that exists in that room.
Yeah, all right.
Now, even if the locked room fake death story isn't true, there is still quite a bit of speculation that this lady, the brown lady, did not, in fact, die of smallpox in 1726, but was rather murdered when her husband pushed her down the same stairs she appeared on in 1936 in a fit of rage.
There's really no good way to die back then.
No, it's smallpox, yeah. Starving to death,
it's
locked
like
in a room.
Jaw rot, get shot in the face by a musket,
right?
Be bitten by a snake.
Mm-hmm.
You get dysentery from an outdoor toilet.
That's it?
You just get beaten to death, hit by a carriage, and sometimes they just stop breathing.
Yeah, maybe you stomped on by some cows.
You're giving birth to a baby, it gets stuck up against your hole, and then just goes until it fucking mixes up your fucking insides,
right.
And then you die going, while the father just sits sipping brandy, smoking a cigar, saying, unfortunate.
Better get another one.
Men did great.
Men were having a fine time. A little bit of a better time, I suppose.
Wool rashes was bad enough.
But, you know, I was thinking about, I mean, how disgusting. It's a terrible death to die flying down a flight of stairs. You break your neck or
yeah,
your bone.
She broke her neck, supposedly.
But that's quick.
Is it that quick?
Yeah, it's kind of fun, actually. I think that's kind of a fun way to go.
The stairs?
I say the worst way to go is bleeding out of your ass until you die inside of a porta potty.
Yeah.
I actually don't know. That could feel refreshing.
Well, the first recorded sighting of the brown lady's ghost came on Christmas, 1835, over 100 years after her death. A one Colonel Loftus reported that as he lay in bed Christmas night, a woman in a brown dress approached him, and as her glowing face drew near, he saw that her eyes were nothing more than empty sockets.
Hot. Lay her down and put some hard-boiled eggs in them. Crack those open. Have fun.
And the colonel left Raymond House that night with most of the household staff following him the next day.
Can you imagine the shrieking of a colonel, like, running up?
What do you think? Do you go with him or not? You're sleeping? You didn't see the ghost?
Get the fuck out of there.
You go? Okay.
Yeah, it's 1836. You can get another servant's job.
I want to see the goddamn ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's where the next sighting comes in. That happened only 1 year later in 1836. This time, the witness was Captain Frederick Marryat, who is a pioneer of the sea novel. The captain was staying at Ryman House for the express purpose of dispelling the haunting rumors, saying that the whole thing was just a cover for local smugglers hoping to scare away anyone who might come across their operation, also known as the Scooby-Doo Gambit.
Is that what you made up? I like that. The idea is that just a bunch of people walked around with, like, sheets on going like, oh, leave your wallet. Oh, the only way I will ever peacefully rest is if you give me those Air Jordans.
I don't know if they had Air Jordans back then.
Now, while the first two nights passed without incident, the third would prove to be the most eventful. Captain Marryat, a gregarious fellow, had spent that night visiting with some of Raynham House's permanent residents, playing with guns. And upon returning to his room to turn in for the night, the captain happened to tuck a small pistol into the pocket of his nightgown.
Because how else would he not know that his penis didn't work anymore?
That's right.
And as he walked down the hallway back to his room, he noticed a woman at the end of the hall carrying a lamp, slowly approaching. And the captain, being a modest Victorian, quickly hid in one of the hallway closets, keeping the door cracked open just enough to make sure he knew when the woman had passed by, and he could then continue on his way. But as the figure drew nearer, the captain recognized her from a portrait that had hung above the bed in the guest room. It was indeed the Brown Lady of Ryman Hall, and even though the captain had not made a sound, the apparition stopped at the exact spot where he was hiding, turned her head, and grinned. Now, after the woman turned and grinned her diabolical smile at the captain, not taking any chances, immediately opened fire on the ghost, firing two shots into her head. The Brown Lady quickly vanished, the only evidence of the incident being two bullets lodged in the door opposite the captain.
And that captain was the great-great-great-grandfather of famous American George Zimmerman.
I knew you were going to say George Zimmerman. I knew it so hard.
Now, the photographer of the infamous stairway photo was the last person to witness the Brown Lady of Ryman Hall. And although no one has been able to conclusively prove that the photo is a fake, there are a few theories as to how it could have been done.
Because there's a thing Marcus and I were talking about earlier when we were talking about the episode, is that it seems like, I don't know whether or not it was much easier to fake a ghost picture back in the day than it is now, or if it was actually much harder.
I think it would be much harder, wouldn't it be?
Well, what they used to do, like all of the we're really the only photos that we're talking about today are the ones that haven't been conclusively debunked.
Yes.
There are thousands of fake ghost photos that were made in these days because it was actually extremely easy to do. What they would do, it was a double exposure, is that they would just expose part of one photo over the setting of another photo, and it would create like a transparent ghostly, like ghost-like image.
And so, right. And on this picture, they say, oh, maybe a way it could have been faked was by smearing grease on the lens.
Yeah, because it's not a clear figure. Like, it's merely, I mean, it's human-shaped. But he does.
It's a haunting picture, and we're putting together a photo album of all of these pictures, and it's very it feels real.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. It really does feel
real.
What
do I know? I smoke weed soon as I'm not talking.
See, that's I don't smoke weed, so I can also say that it feels real from a sober and clear-headed perspective, I might add.
All right, there we go.
Poo-poo, I poo-poo on you.
Uh-oh, poo-poo alert.
Now, some people say that, yes, it could have been a smudge on the camera. They say he possibly used grease or Vaseline, something like that. Others said it could have been an accidental double exposure or that light somehow got into a camera. But that doesn't explain the accidental theory doesn't explain why the photographer on site witnessed the ghost.
This was the 1800s?
This is 1936.
You don't waste Vaseline in 1936. You don't waste it. No way.
Now, the only full-on attempt at debunking was done by a pair of Hollywood magicians named John Booth and Ron Wilson, using a similar camera and taking a long exposure of Ron walking down the stairs of the Magic Castle in Hollywood. The two were able to make a reasonable facsimile of the Brown Lady photograph.
We're not saying it's real, but it could be. No,
the people who debunked it are magicians. They're liars. That's what they do for a job.
But you should watch the documentary, An Honest Liar.
Oh, it's a great documentary.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's John Randy?
I forget the name.
The Amazing Randy. The Amazing Randy, and it's all about, he was a professional magician that made a whole career on debunking. Essentially, his main enemy was Uri Geller.
Right.
But he also went and attacked several gigantic, super pastors and all that shit in their ways, their healing processes, which is very interesting. But yeah, that's a magician's job, though. That's how he put it, is that a magician's job is to sort of protect the lie.
Yeah.
Like, they are supposed to openly be liars that tell you I'm going to lie to you and tell you I'm going to trick you and then do it, and then you can't see the holes in their trickery of you. And his problem with people that fake ghosts or that fake religious healing is the fact that they are taking advantage of people that are coming at them, vulnerable.
Desperate people.
Right.
Yeah. So the other ghost that has been photographed in England is the ghost of Newby Church up in Yorkshire.
Now, it's among the most famous of all ghost photos, and this one, taken in 1963, shows an almost 9-foot-tall figure wearing a black robe and a white shroud with two dark holes where the eyes should be cover its face, possibly to mask leprosy or another disfigurement. He stands in front of the church rectory, tall and thin. Now, the creature is semi-transparent, which suggests that the picture might be a double exposure, but multiple experts who have examined the photograph over the years found no abnormalities of the type. It's very easy to spot. If you know what to look for on these old photos, it's very easy to spot a double exposure.
Okay, so even if it is double exposure, there's still a 9-foot giant in the town,
yes.
Is that right?
That they had to come and probably pay him 5 shillings and the newly invented peanut butter, a whole bucket of it, to put his shroud on. He's like, "Sir, I stand near the organ. When do I get to go?"
Maybe he's a very nice giant.
No, there's never one.
Yes, there are some.
You're technically the nicest giant I've ever seen.
I'm the only one.
And you're prickly.
Oh my God, I'm not prickly.
Now, the strange thing about the Newby Church photo is that Newby Church itself has never had any reportings of hauntings before the photo was taken or after the photo was taken. And the picture was taken by Reverend K.F. Lord, who at the time reported no apparition whatsoever being present. Now, it is entirely in the realm of possibility that the figure in question is just a projection. But this would have taken a fair amount of fairly complicated equipment and where a reverend from Yorkshire, also known as the Texas of Europe, where he got this equipment, or what his motivation might be for faking such a photo, those are mysteries.
Yeah, they're bog people.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Yorkshire, but it just seems like, I know about the pudding, but then I just feel like most of the people also look like the Yorkshire puddings.
I know enough about Yorkshire.
They're nice people.
I'm not saying they're bad.
I'm just saying
they're of a type. And I'm saying that there's a whole bunch of bog people down there that are like, they're not faking pictures of ghosts. They're too busy getting too drunk to put their thatch huts together.
Well, that's not a bad person. That's just a drunk person.
Now, it isn't just young, beautiful socialites or mysterious leper monks who show up in these photographs. Two of the creepiest examples involve visits from a much more mundane sort, the elderly.
It really, these are the pictures that really do creep me out because they're so real, and a part of it is just true where it's just like, have you ever spent time alone with a really, really old person?
Yeah, I once watched my great aunt Bilo rip apart a teddy bear with her bare hands.
How'd that go for you?
It was traumatizing.
And what did the teddy bear do to your great aunt Bila?
Not Bilo.
Bilo, even worse than Bila.
No idea.
So what was she screaming the whole time, being like, I want to see his guts. I want to see his goddamn guts.
Eerily silent. I only watched her out of the corner of my eye. I'd spent most of the time focusing on the Whataburger that was outside the window.
Terrifying. But so an 85 to 9-year-old, it just feels like death is close.
Yeah.
It feels like ghosts around being like, I can't wait to get over here. I show you where I can get you a seat in the lunchroom that's not too close to the bathroom.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, they're all just waiting to be like, oh, you gotta hurry up and get here. We only got 4 people to play Trivial Pursuit, and it's only fun when we've got 5.
Now, the first example comes from a Mrs. Maybelle Chinnery. One day, as she was visiting her mother's grave in 1959, Maybelle, for some reason, snapped a photo of her husband while he was waiting in the car as he refused to visit the grave of his mother-in-law.
I won't go!
I love that guy.
I refuse to see a grave! I like the car. It's nice and warm in here. You can't make me go. I hate putting flowers on things, and I hate things written in stone. You know why? Because I hate permanence.
That's a good point.
I will leave!
Now, when the film was developed, the couple noticed a shadowy figure lurking in the back seat. And on further inspection, Mabel discovered that the figure was a dead ringer for her dead mother, whose grave they were visiting that day. Once again, double exposure and reflection have been ruled out completely, and one photographic expert even said that he staked his reputation on his claim that the picture is genuine.
Very cool.
It's very cool, and it's a very scary-looking picture.
It's terrifying.
But what I like about it, too, is it's that It's a part of what almost makes me believe in sort of the holographic nature of ghosts, and how even when you don't see it, it's like these dubiously real pictures, the ones that you look at and like and that are heavily kind of, they try to debunk them, but they can't really. Mm-hmm. The photo quality of the ghost is very interesting because it's like an attempt at it being actually there. Like, it looks, the picture is, looks like a dream logic version of a person actually being there.
Do you think it's like the ghost really trying hard, like if you're constipated, you know, but you're a ghost and you really want to be seen, do you have to like really push hard?
You're talking about like in the movie Ghost?
No, not in the movie Ghost. It's
a good
movie.
You're talking about Ditto pushing the penny, kind of got to think real hard, be Patrick Swayze kind of ghost?
That kind of ghost.
Yeah.
But to be like seen, yeah.
I don't know. I would just feel really bad for Patrick Swayze if he's going in auditions rooms even now just trying to push pennies and being like, you get it? You know, I mean, you're like, it's a big fun joke to him.
And no one respects the penny anymore.
No. He's trapped between worlds.
The other example is a fairly innocent picture of an old lady at a nursing home. The old woman's daughter, visiting her on family day, took a picture of the octogenarian looking somewhat morose and not extremely pleased that her picture was being taken.
Because think about this. You ship an old woman to an old people's hotel where old men are finger banging every woman that's around them, which is true.
Yeah.
There's a lot more STDs, weird instances. Yeah. All that shit happening. You basically put her in like in Sing Sing, but for old people, like it's like benevolently, you can't leave though, you know, like you're kind of kept purposefully in prison. And so then they have a family day where you could come and eat Jell-O and stare at them.
Yeah,
and then you'll get to leave again and be like, bye, Grandma. Yeah. Meanwhile, you get to go and fucking 69 your husband without hearing your mother in the other room talk about how loose her goddamn teeth are.
That's right. I do picture them taking pictures of ghosts, and then the person is just like, I'm still alive. And they're like, okay.
All right.
I'm still alive here.
Look at this incredibly realistic ghost picture.
Now, when that particular picture was developed, a figure who had not been noticed at the time appeared behind the old woman, and the family says the figure, who I might say looks a hell of a lot like the giant from Twin Peaks, is without a doubt the old woman's husband, who died 13 years prior.
It's a pretty creepy picture.
Yeah.
And he's definitely like staring.
Yeah, hollow-eyed.
Poor guy, too, on his death, but he's like, finally, I've been released from this woman. And then
Marilyn Monroe will be here, or Jane Mansfield, my favorites are back in the... Oh, God damn it, I gotta see Maud again.
You can't even talk back to her.
Now, although these pictures are definitely creepy, perhaps the most fascinating paranormal photographic phenomenon had more to do with the photographer than the photos themselves, which brings us to Mr. Ted Serios.
Ted, Mr. Silly Serios.
Oh, nice.
Possibly one of my favorite people that we've ever covered here on Last Podcast.
I love this guy.
This man, he is fascinating. So, Ted, he was an alcoholic, unemployed bellhop from Chicago. He was also a former car thief, a compulsive liar, and almost certainly a psychopath. But he had one special skill. He claimed that he could transfer his thoughts to film.
This is a problem.
Yeah.
When your whole life is bullshit.
Oh, what's the problem?
And you've always been, you are a compulsive liar, thief, criminal, unemployed bellhop.
Which is just unemployed, by the way.
Which is just you just are a human cart.
Yeah.
Not to insult a bellhop.
No, I love a good bellhop.
A good bellhop.
A good bellhop.
Of course.
But most bellhops are naughty. Okay. Naughty bellhop.
I don't know what your experiences have been, but
they're trying to get in there. Every bellhop, when they come in there and they're kind of waiting for the tip, a little bit is like they're kind of hoping, being like, maybe you could just show me the tip.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Now, Ted, his method was that he would use a piece of plastic tubing that he called his gizmo in conjunction with copious amounts of alcohol, which he called film juice.
I love it so much.
Ted produced over 1,000 images in his career as a thoughtographer, as he called himself.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, Ted's method was to get blindingly drunk, hold his gizmo up to the lens of a Polaroid camera, scream obscenities, often in various states of undress, and instruct the photographer exactly when to take the photo.
It sounds like Gary Busey.
I would pay so much money to see this man work.
Oh, my God. I wish I could have seen him. Now, Ted was discovered in the mid-60s by a respected psychiatrist named Dr. Jule Eisenbud.
It's pronounced Yuli. Yuli Eisenbud.
He was from the University of Denver. Here's Dr. Eisenbud talking about what would transpire during the Serio sessions.
When he was hot, when he was in the groove, what happened was that first he would start by alternating whiteies and blackies. Hmm. Blackies is total obstruction of the light, no light getting in. Whiteies is total overexposure, which shouldn't have been.
Dated terms.
Then the pictures would start getting darker and darker and darker, and then he would start to imprint parts of people or scenes.
It almost Ooh. Sounds like when he was hot and in the groove, it immediately sort of sounds like he's talking about a DJ.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
And also the alternating whiteies and blackies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. DJ Serios.
DJ Serios. Yeah, ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great name. But whiteies and blackies, that was yeah. just because there was white exposures and black exposures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
what would you call them? Henry Zebrowski.
Don't even ask him that. Why are you just creating yourself? You know you're gonna have to edit out whatever the answer is.
No, you call him Ronnie's and Oprah's.
Oh, okay, Ronnie's and Oprah's.
But no, well,
the images that Ted produced, remarkable to say the very least. You know, at the very end, what Dr. Eisenbud was talking about is that these images, besides just the whiteies and the blackies, which were, they shouldn't have been, by all accounts, they should not have, they shouldn't have showed up like that. Mm. A small number of the photographs actually showed images of faraway places that Ted had never visited. And the most compelling images showed words misspelled, such as the Mountie station whose sign spelled Canadian wrong, or the picture of the airplane whose struts appeared to be inverted. And these sorts of inconsistencies and rearrangements of letters are exactly the types of things that we encounter in dreams.
And we were talking about just earlier when I was saying about the dream logic attached to ghost phenomena and UFO phenomena, any sort of anomalous phenomena is very interesting. It's about... That to me, what kind of makes it a little bit more legit is that when you see the weird, they're not perfectly like made pictures. They right. look like smears. They look like a thing you see out of the corner of your eye, and then he kind of somehow throws them blindingly drunk
right.
onto yeah. a, not unlike Jackson Pollock.
Yeah. So it's like a window pane when it's raining outside sort of thing, right?
Actually, yeah, a lot like that. It would be a little blurry, but sometimes it would be very sharp and focused. Of course, there were plenty of skeptics, most of them focused on Ted's little gizmo, which, again, was either a short piece of plastic tubing or a rolled up piece of paper, depending on Ted's mood that day. Now, here are two skeptics explaining just how Ted would have been able to fake his thoughtographs.
Charles Reynolds and David Eisendrath, experts in both photography and conjuring, speculate that Ted might have used the gizmo to hide a pocket magnifying lens with a tiny slide stuck on the end.
By taking a piece of a transparency, a piece of a photographic transparency, and fastening it across the end, when light passes through the transparency and then through the lens, is picked up by the optical system of the Polaroid camera, and voila, it becomes a photographic image.
Somebody has a wedgie callus.
Uh-oh.
The main problem, though, is with it is that in order to take the pictures they show later on, is that you had to put the tube flat against the camera lens while they took the picture. But the problem is that he was, like, part of the thing that makes it seem that that explanation less legit was how hammered Ted was.
Yeah.
Ted would get so hammered and so belligerent. When you see footage of the actual process, he's running around going like, he's just gonna like go, fuck you, fuck you, to the camera. They're trying to like bleep it out, and he's like, the little device hardly hits the camera.
Yeah. Hmm. But the skeptics actually say use the exact same thing.
Yeah,
to
they
debunk
try he uses
they
it.
They say that it is actually an old magician's trick is to cause chaos. It's misdirection.
True.
Ah, yeah. Yes.
But although that definitely is compelling, it doesn't explain Ted's second method of thoughtography. What Ted would do with the photographer miles away, he'd call up the lab and tell them exactly when to take a picture and when the Polaroids, and by the way, Polaroids impossible to tamper with in post-production. When the Polaroids came into focus, the researchers found that the pictures would be completely blacked out even though there was nothing blocking the lens and there was plenty of light in the room.
Cool.
And Ted's last thoughtograph was taken on June 15th, 1967. It was an unusually sharp picture of a set of red curtains. And Ted somehow survived into the 21st century and died in 2006, and the mystery of thoughtography died with him.
Interesting. Oh, well, he's just one of those guys that just lived with spite. He just lived like, he just lived to be like, you're all telling me I'm supposed to die, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Drink until everybody leaves me alone.
Amazing. He had a very long life.
Yeah, he had an extremely long life. Yeah, I mean, when he was doing
this... Yeah, for a screaming alcoholic psychic photographer.
And for even a vegan who was sober, he had a long life.
Yeah, I mean, he was... when I've seen the videos of him in 1967, he looked near middle-aged, but with alcoholic bellhops, it's real hard to gauge exactly how old they are.
Especially when they're unemployed bellhops.
Yeah, a lot of time on their hands.
Wow, all right, great episode about paranormal photography and technology.
But I still don't ever want to take away from the ghost argument. Like, I want ghosts to be real.
We all do.
I believe there is something to, and again, we're going to find later on in life, I think 100 years from now, it will finally be that gigantic theory that ties together ghosts and aliens and Bigfoot. I think there is something to all of that phenomena put together. That's why we see ghosts in the same place we see UFOs, that we see Sasquatch. It all happens. There are places that have high, I want to say, psychic energy to them.
Well, reality is thin.
I believe it entirely. And you could change your reality. You fuckers.
That's
believing in yourself.
You can. You can change your reality. Indeed. All right, well, let's see here. What do we do now?
Right off to up top, man, I want to thank the city of Baltimore for showing us such an amazing fucking time
last
weekend.
Thank you for not killing us, Baltimore.
Oh, such an incredible, incredible show.
That was one of the best weekends I've had in I don't know how long. I love your city. It's fantastic. We all love your city. Mm-hmm. We cannot wait to come back. And because of the success of this one, we're definitely planning a lot more live shows. Because of the success of this one and because of the success of our Patreon campaign, which, thank you guys so much. Go to patreon.com to give to our Patreon campaign. Because of all this, we're going to be doing a lot more live shows this summer.
We're looking at shows in Atlanta. We're looking at shows in Baltimore again. We're looking at shows in Chicago. That's what we're trying to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we will make a solemn promise to you right now, even though the shows might be a day or two late here and there as we're traveling, we're still going to be putting out episodes every single week. So don't you fucking worry about
that. Don't you fucking ever worry about it for a second.
I don't think they were worried about
it. You just wake up. If you just fell asleep at this podcast, you wake up. The world's on fire.
You're projecting a little bit, I think.
I'm just saying we're fine. We want to do the show. We love it. We love it. It's the only thing I have.
Yeah, it's the only
thing. To put my thoughts out into the universe.
That's good. Well, it's nice to get them out there.
Thank God, right? Because if not, they just sit in my brain. Like my brain is a casket for ideas.
That's terrible. Your ideas should not sit in a casket.
No.
They need to be expressed.
If you guys want your last podcast on the left t-shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch. And once you get it, go to our Facebook page and post a little selfie of yourself. I love seeing the selfies of people with the t-shirts. It's super cool.
You can find Marcus Parks on Twitter, at Marcus Parks, and on at Instagram. Dr. Fantasty, that's Henry on Instagram, and Henry Loves You on Twitter.
Yeah, and at LP on the left for our last podcast Instagram as well.
Yeah, and go listen to my new radio show, Lucky Bone Show, mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks. It's all Marcus Parks, all of it.
I'm on Twitter at Ben Kissel, and check out Abe Lincoln's Top Pet to follow the politics and stuff like that. We just had an ex-CIA agent on, Mike Baker. That was fun.
People are really loving this episode. It's really interesting.
Did you spill any beans?
No, I asked him about reptilians towards the end. He got a little shaky. He did get nervous. Yeah,
I would have gotten in his face physically.
Well, he was far away. It was a phone conversation.
I would have. Yeah, I want to meet him.
No. No, it's a really interesting insight into the CIA from a person who actually worked in the CIA for decades at a time.
And then, of course, the Roundtable of Gentlemen as well. Mm-hmm. Check out those shows. And I guess I'm just going to say hail yourselves.
I'm going to say Hal Gein.
Hail Satan, the one true Lord.
Hey there, fuckers. This is Hong Kong Henry Zabrowski, and I want to remind you to watch my special on Netflix coming out March 11th at midnight from the series called The Characters. You're going to see mine. You'll recognize my body in it, hopefully. And spread the word that you know and I know that I'm doing the good work of our true Lord and Savior, Satan himself, with making as much nude, bush hair-showing comedy as possible. All right? So you fucking do that. Hail Satan.